Welcome to the Mindful and Millionaire podcast. I'm Steffi Rose Duman, and I'll be interviewing the most inspiring guests on the combination of spiritual growth and business success. My guest on today's show is Swami Purnachaitanya, author, public speaker, and spiritual guide. I met up with him in my office in Amsterdam, which was extra special because he is almost never in the Netherlands. He might be Dutch, but he lives all over the world because of his work for The Art of Living. Because Swami's bestseller, Looking Inward, has just been translated into Dutch, he came over. After his studies, Swami moved to India to learn from Sri Sri Ravi Shankar. This guru even appointed him as Swami, which is a spiritual guide, a sort of monk. And he's the only Western person to be appointed by this guru. Welcome. It's really nice to have you here.
Thank you so much, Steffi.
Yeah, and really an honor because you're not in the Netherlands that much.
Correct.
Yeah, so you're here for your book, your Dutch book, which it's amazing. I just read it and I love it. Tell me about your book. What does it mean to you?
Well, basically, I have been teaching and practicing meditation for over 20 years now. So apart from any other things that I do, it's something that I'm definitely passionate about. Especially during the lockdown, during the pandemic, I realized that it's even more needed nowadays than it was maybe 5 or 10 years ago to learn how to manage our mind, how to manage our emotions, because I saw there were so many people who were really struggling. And of course, in the news, we saw that domestic violence rates went up, suicides went up, yeah. Divorces went up. So people are not used to being stuck together maybe or being stuck inside, but it shows that we've never really learned how to deal with our mind or emotions. And of course, I've been teaching people across the world for so many years. But then in the scenario of the pandemic, I realized that there are so many more people who now desperately need this knowledge. So what are other ways that we can reach them? So of course, we were doing online sessions, online programs, using social media, how we can. But then I was actually approached by Penguin in India, the publisher. And they said, you know, and it was just when the pandemic started or just before, can you write a book about something like this? How to help people manage their mind and emotions, how to learn how to meditate or improve their meditation practice. And I said, yes, why not? So I thought, let me try. And I wrote the book and they loved it. So it was published in India first last year. Mm-hmm. And it's already a national bestseller. It was received very well. It's being translated into 10 languages already. But then, of course, Dutch is special to me because it's my mother tongue. It's, yeah. You know, I was born in Holland, born and raised. But yeah, so now I had a chance to come to Europe for the book launch of the Dutch book, as well as the UK edition. So in England, it's also being released now, in Germany, in a few other countries. But it's beautiful to see how, yeah, even through a book, people are really benefiting. Yeah. So it's quite humbling for me to get the messages I receive. Just about 10 days back, I was still in India and I was conducting a meditation retreat with about 150 people in a city called Pune. And we have a beautiful setup there, a retreat center, an ashram. And one of the participants, one gentleman, came up to me on the last day. He said, you know, I really need to speak to you. And I was already getting late for another meeting. I said, okay, we can talk on the way. So I was walking. And then he burst out into tears. So I stopped. I said, okay, let me see. What is it that he wants to share? And then he told me, he said, someone had framed him and he was in jail for 75 days before his case was cleared. Yeah. And, well, of course, it's a very unpleasant experience. And his wife had actually given him a copy of my book when he was in jail. And he said, you know, this saved me. You know, this helped me through this incredibly difficult period. So it's stories like this that I would have never imagined. But, yeah, it's very touching to see that even a book can really help. And, of course, that was the intention. Mm-hmm. But it's beautiful to see that
it really works.
It's serving it, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, because I've read amazing stories in your book about even teaching a guy that's 115 years old and so many beautiful stories. But what would you say is the most touching story? This one is already amazing, but about meditating. What do people tell you that how it changed their lives? What is it that changes the life? What is it about meditation that's so special?
Well, I think that most of us have been raised and brought up and have been taught to look outside of us for things to feel good, to be successful, to have a sense of security. You know, like usually that's what we hear. Okay, you need to have whatever, a decent job, you need to have some income, you need to have a place to stay, preferably achieve something, you know, be successful in whatever you do, have nice friends and a lovely partner, or have lots of kids or whatever it may be. But then we've also seen, especially during this pandemic, that many of these things can change anytime. You know, we think, okay, I have a good bank balance, but suddenly the economy collapses or something else happens and it may change. Or you never worried about your health and suddenly there is a virus and some people got really worried. They may be very healthy, very fit, but they say, oh, what will happen? What if I get this virus? Will I be okay? Or people who rely on their friends, that you say, okay, at least in the evening or in the weekend, we have some time to spend time together, and suddenly you're not allowed to meet people. And of course, this was always there. I mean, there was always a chance that your girlfriend will break up with you or that you suddenly lose your job. But it became even more obvious, maybe, for people during this time that this can happen anytime. And then it shakes you, because if we rely on those things for our sense of security, our happiness, our peace of mind, then there is no guarantee. Then, oh, what if this changes? And this is what we saw. That's why many people felt very uncomfortable. But then the beauty of meditation is that it is connecting to that part of you that doesn't change. And this can give you a kind of solace, a kind of strength, and a kind of stability that nothing else can give you. And the more you're able to consciously experience that, because it's always there. But when you consciously are able to experience that, latch onto that or tap into that, then what happens is any changes that you may experience don't really shake you. So even if it's your body, you know, we're going to age sooner or later. So if you're too attached to your body, then, oh, if some wrinkles come or if some stiffness comes or something else comes, you have less hair or more hair or who knows what, then it can be really a problem. But if you know, but there's a part of me that is eternal, then even one day when we have to leave this body, then that's okay. Then it doesn't shake you so much. And I think to be able to really appreciate life, really enjoy life, this is essential. You know, it's a kind of, you know, in English, this beautiful word, dispassion is there. I mean, it's sometimes taken out of context, but if you really look at it, when you have that sense of dispassion, that is when you can be really passionate. Yeah. You know, it's when you have a kind of detachment, that is when you can really give your 100%. So people think it's the other way around, but this is what really allows you to live, even in a relationship. If you really don't need anything from the other person because you feel so fulfilled, that is when you can truly say, okay, I'm there for you. I can do, or I'm open to what you need, because there is no need from my side.
Yeah,
so meditation, I think, can complete us in so many aspects of life.
Mm-hmm.
And I think now more than ever, we need it. It's a necessity.
And I'm a big fan of meditation, of course. And I try to introduce it in this office. I'm like, yes, I'm so enthusiastic about it. But I have a hard time convincing people that work and that find success important. What would you say to those people that like feel like, no, I have too much work, I don't have time to meditate?
Honestly, these are the people that need it more. If someone is very chilled out, very lazy, and they don't have any work, maybe it's not really needed for them. But if you're really busy, that is when you need to also really rest. You know, it's like if you have a lot of work to do, if you're well rested, if you're fresh, you're energetic, you can get it done very quickly. We've all had this experience. Yeah. On those days when you slept really well, you feel fresh, you sit down and you get so much of work done even before lunch. And it feels great. You know, it's like, oh, wow, this day is a success. But sometimes if you're already tired, you feel a little drained or you're not well rested, then the same thing takes so much more time. Then even in the entire day, you don't get as much done, because you don't have that clarity, maybe not as much creativity or that perception, observation, expression, everything gets affected. And meditation, what many people don't realize, is a rest that is even deeper than sleep. So if we look at in good sleep, when you have a good deep sleep, the amount of rest that your mind gets in 20 minutes of proper meditation is the same as 4 to 6 hours of sleep.
That's bizarre.
And nowadays, with the lifestyles that we live, the amount of work we have, the kind of impressions, when we talk about media, social media or computer, our mind has a lot to digest. So even that's why many times nowadays when people sleep, you wake up in the morning, you don't feel really fresh. Physically, it's plenty. You know, it's not like we're doing hardcore physical labor, but for the mind, many times you don't feel really fresh. So it feels like you need something more. That's when you say, okay, I need a cup of coffee or I need to whatever, go and do a workout. Or so meditation can give you that intense rest that you need to be able to be dynamic again in your action. So if you're really busy, I would say it's a must, because if you don't do it, you will get less done. So the output will be less. So it's like an investment. You invest that 20 minutes and then for the next few hours, you're much more productive.
Yeah, that's a good word. It's an investment in
yes,
time.
Yes.
And
yeah, people respond to that.
Yeah, right. I'm going to try that. Of course, this podcast is called Mindful and Millionaire. And I'm curious, do you feel rich? And what does feeling rich mean to you?
I feel very rich. People wonder because the fact that I'm a Swami. Swami means a monk.
Yeah.
It's like a monk of the Vedic tradition. So you're a monk. I live out of a suitcase. My spiritual master can send me anywhere. I've spent most of the last 3 years in Africa. Before that, I've spent a lot of time in India, some other parts of the world. So when it comes to material possessions, I may not qualify. But then the beauty is, and I've had a very beautiful experience once in this context, is that I found that I can feel so comfortable anywhere. And I remember that a few years back, I was in interior places in India in the northeastern region near the China border. And these are like tribal areas. You have these indigenous tribes, people there. And those areas where I was traveling that time, there was no phone network, no electricity even sometimes. And one evening I was sitting in a bamboo hut house around a fireplace with the village headman and his family. They were hosting me. And suddenly it struck me that I'm sitting there having this boiled rice and these boiled leaves from the jungle, because I'm vegetarian, so I was not partaking of the local delicacies that they found. But I was having these leaves and this rice sitting around a fire with this elderly gentleman wearing a very different type of clothes, speaking a completely different language than I had grown up with. So we were speaking in Hindi, which I picked up along the way in India. And I thought, I would have never imagined that I would find myself in such a place. You know, it's so different from the Netherlands, from Europe in any way. And at the same time, it struck me that I felt so at home. And I've realized that time and again, that the more you, like I said, you feel comfortable and you're able to connect with that part of you that doesn't change, then rather than feeling uncomfortable with different people, different places, different activities, you come from a space where you can actually enjoy and appreciate it. And for me, this has been a tremendous wealth, because it has allowed me to live with so many different types of people, to learn about their lives, their world, to connect with them, whether I'm conducting a program in a high security prison in somewhere in Africa, or like I said, living with indigenous people somewhere in India, or sitting down with a businessman in Hong Kong, or doing a program in the Middle East. You know, it's, this world is so beautiful. It has so much of diversity.
Yeah.
And to be able to feel at home wherever you go and to really feel comfortable is, I think, a great wealth, because it means I can be comfortable anywhere.
Yeah, that is being rich, I think, to feel that. You already said, like, you had taught people in prisons, in businessmen. If we focus on the businessmen, because there's a lot of resistance to spirituality, and I try to, well, make it better. But what do you think, how do these two topics connect? How does spirituality connect to being successful, running a business?
Well, you know, Steffi, I think if I've seen also, in especially now the last 2 years, I have personally actually conducted quite a few programs, even for top corporates,
yeah,
their top management CEOs of companies like, you know, Barclays, you know, YPOs all over the world. And I think that is already a shift happening where,
yeah,
there is a lot more awareness for, I would say, one is the health component, where people realize that we also need to take care of our mental and emotional health,
mm-hmm,
which may have been ignored or kind of shunned for quite a long time. But now it's becoming more and more okay to say that I'm stressed out or I'm burnt out, or it's a reality for people, you know. So one is that aspect. And then I'm also seeing that the kind of meaning or purpose or the ethics component also is something that is becoming more and more, I would say, attended to, or like highlighted, at least flagged in the current scenario, because many companies are struggling with this, where you say, okay, you have your management and your employees, but how do you keep them really committed? How do you take care of not just their mental well-being, but also their commitment to the work? You know, if someone feels that, okay, yes, this is my company or I'm a part of this, they may go that extra mile. But if someone just works to make the hours, then in the end for the company, it's not beneficial. It's not great. So I think even for top management, we see more and more that people are realizing that, oh, yes, I need to also attend to this part.
Yeah, the connection.
One is for myself and one is for my company also.
Yeah, that's beautiful. And it's a good thing they hire you and then becomes a bit more normal. You also talk about like mindfulness and meditation. Is it something different?
Yeah. And it's interesting because especially in the corporate world, I'm sure you would have noticed this, as you said, sometimes, and it differs in different parts of the world, but sometimes there is still a slight, I would say, reluctance maybe to go full-fledged for something like meditation, because sometimes they still feel, oh, there is a cultural connotation or a religious connotation to it.
And crystals for that.
But then, either it's airy-fairy or it's like, oh, but maybe this is like a different religion or I'm not religious at all. But then at the same time, you see that mindfulness is become tremendously popular in the corporate world. And I've had instances where I actually was in talks with we were talking to a company, a corporate in South Africa, for example, and they were very keen for us to do some regular programs for their employees. And then when we put forward the proposal, then they actually got back saying, you know, this sounds really nice and it looks good, but the only thing is, would you mind instead of meditation to call it mindfulness? So there is this perception that mindfulness is much more secular. And recently I actually came across an article. I found it quite funny. It was very serious, but in the UK, there's also an institute that has been conducting programs, and they now had sent out a press release proclaiming that now we have come up with something called secular mindfulness. So it's like even more safe.
Yeah.
But the truth is, in this craze for mindfulness practice, meditation, we see that many times these terms get mixed. Like we said, mindfulness is like the more secular word for meditation. At the same time, sometimes we see that also people come up with all kinds of things and they just call it mindfulness or meditation. Just like with yoga, now we have goat yoga, beer yoga, God knows what. But if you really study the scriptures, if you go look at the tradition, at this ancient science, which has so much to offer, then we find that many times what is offered nowadays under the name of yoga may be something completely different, or it somewhere misses the point, or it doesn't take you to the same goal. The same if we look at mindfulness and meditation. If we actually look at it properly, many of the meditation techniques that people offer nowadays, in some way, actually, yes, they come under mindfulness, in the sense that mindfulness is a practice where you consciously become mindful. So you focus your mind somewhere, and that is many times a big improvement because our mind tends to be so scattered. We multitask almost everything nowadays. So then becoming mindful, taking your attention to your breath or to a sensation, or like, you know, some of the meditations where you visualize something. But then if we look at the ancient tradition where these techniques come from and the yogic scriptures, they talk about something called dharana. And dharana is where you bring your attention, what we can say mindfulness. And then there is another practice, which they call dhyana, which is what we can say meditation, where you go one step further. So rather than actively engaging your mind and focusing on something, the next step is then real meditation is to transcend the mind. And that is where you relax. So you move from effort to effortlessness. And that doesn't mean mindfulness doesn't have many benefits. And it can be a great preparation for meditation. Like many of the meditations you may initially want to collect your mind, bring it together, but then somewhere you need to let go. Because if you keep focusing, then I've seen this even in corporates, you do a 15-minute session, people may feel more focused, a little more calm. But then if you do a short guided meditation with them, then people say, oh, I feel so fresh, I feel so nice. So it's a different level altogether. And it has many more benefits to offer. So that's why in the book I made sure to also dedicate one chapter to that, because there may be many people who either are already practicing meditation or they're keen to start, but then how to go about it, or how do you know that you're doing it right? So it's not that there is only one right way of meditation. That's why I've not stuck to any one specific technique in the book, but there are certain principles that we can follow or that if you're aware of can guide you so that you know that, yes, I'm on the right track. And it would be a shame if someone practices for so many years without actually getting some of the fruits that real meditation has to offer.
Yeah, that's what I had to think about, because mindfulness now almost is used in corporates. Like, oh, do some mindfulness, then you can work longer, instead of what is meditation really is about, like getting into yourself instead of, no, it's not a easy way to get people like not burned out.
Yeah.
But notice, I love that in your book. Do you think here in the Western world, people work hard and we use mindfulness as a way to like focus? Can we achieve that state of meditation by ourselves, or do we always need a teacher for that?
Well, we can never really generalize, because
Of course.
There will always be people who may have an innate ability, or some things come easy to different people. But yes, it's been my experience. And even if we look at the tradition, because I feel very fortunate that I have been trained and become part of such an ancient tradition, that it's always been emphasized that it's important to learn these things from a teacher, from a master, or someone who knows, simply because it's so subtle. You know, if we look at our life, we have someone to teach us how to drive a car, or maybe how to read and write, such basic things. But then if you look at our mind, it's very subtle. So how do you manage your mind? How do you know that you're doing it right? And when we're dealing with spiritual practices, for example, you may be sitting and feeling very nice, but then if you're really sincere, there may be this question that, okay, how do I know that I'm really doing it right? Or how did I know? Do I know that there is nothing beyond this? And that doubt will always remain unless you have someone who can verify, who can say, okay, yes, now tell me, what is your experience? This and this and this. They say, okay, yes, you got it right, or there is something more. In the same way that I always recommend people that, if you're really serious about maybe starting some yoga or learning some breathing techniques, at least initially, find someone who is a proper, qualified, or capable teacher. Because if you just take a YouTube video or an app, however well it may be made, they will not be able to correct you. And I've seen this. People may be practicing very sincerely, and they may be doing something wrong, but then that YouTube video is not going to tell them that, no, you have to turn your hand the other way, or you'd have to breathe out in a different manner. So that doesn't mean they may not benefit in some way, but and sometimes also it can cause problems. And when it's something as subtle as your thoughts, it can be a great support to have someone who can at least teach you, okay, this is the way to go about it. It can save you a lot of time and effort, and it can give you the kind of confidence and guidance that will allow you to progress much faster. So in the same way, so in the book, of course, I have given people practical exercises to get started on their practice, or to improve their or build on their practice. But at the same time, I have also encouraged them that, yes, if you would like to explore certain things more, whether it is some breathing techniques or a specific technique of meditation, then definitely it is recommended to take out that few days. It doesn't have to be years or decades, but to learn something properly, it'll really help.
Yeah, what you said, this is a really good way to start, I think. Also because you make it sound quite easy. Also in the sense, like, it is hard, so it's okay if it's hard. Yeah. Even for you, like, for me it was really nice, like, okay, yes.
Yeah, many people shared this with me. I hadn't consciously thought about it, but they told me that the book, it's not condescending. So it doesn't tell you, okay, this is wrong.
This is how you do it.
Yeah, you should do it like that. And I've had many people also come back to me saying that even though they had been practicing on and off, the book has really helped them to become more regular with their practice. And I think that's also something that's always a challenge, no? Whether it is working out or anything good we want to incorporate, but how to be regular, how to make it a part of your life. So I've given a few tips for that as well.
Yeah. Do you think that is your mission, maybe, on being here, that you make it less scary, you make it very easy? You're like a connection between, but you say you're a monk, but you also...
East and West.
Yeah. You let meet everything, you
ancient
merge
and
everything.
Modern.
Yeah. But what do you feel is your mission, your dharma?
Well, to be honest, because this is just one of the things, of course, like I said, I'm doing so many things.
Yeah.
My mission, if we want to call it that, or my dharma, is the way I see it. And I felt it even when I was much younger as well, that I would like to contribute, help people in whatever way I can. And I found that this is one of the most purposeful, useful, profound ways to help people. That apart from, of course, we're involved in service projects. Someone doesn't have a roof over their head, or they don't have an education. we do our best to help with that as well. But in the end, the most valuable thing that you can teach a person is, like I said, to connect to that source within, because it can give you a kind of strength and fulfillment and peace that you cannot find anywhere else. So in whatever ways I can, I do my best to share this knowledge, whatever little I have learned, and I keep learning. Like I have made some CDs with mantras, for example, people can listen to, they can meditate with.
Nice, yeah.
I do my best to keep up with my social media, to share things whenever I can, give talks, discourses, programs. But yes, I have found over the years that in many places where I've gone, that sometimes it helps that maybe I had a Western upbringing, so I know the mindset or I know the life there. And at the same time, I was very fortunate and blessed that I had the opportunity to go so deep into the ancient, you can say, Eastern traditions that I have an experience of that as well. So even in India, people sometimes tell me that, you know, how come you know more about these things than we do?
Yeah.
And in the same way, people in the West have told me that, you know, it's so nice that you explain things in a very systematic way because, you know, that's what we're used to. So, yeah, maybe it's a beautiful coincidence or this worked out nicely.
Yeah, like a monk on Instagram. That's cool, right?
Nowadays, that's cool. Yeah, now sometimes people ask me that, you know, like, oh, why is a monk on social media? But then the whole point is that you want to reach people. Yeah. So, I mean, I'm happy sitting on a mountain and meditating. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I think, you know, that's a better option. But at the same time, if you see the people are struggling, you can't just sit quiet. And of course, it doesn't mean I don't come out of my house. I travel all over the world. But at the same time, I've seen that you never know how you can reach someone whom you can help.
Yeah.
And that way, at least let us use technology for good. You know?
Yeah.
There are many people anyway spamming it with all kinds of nonsense. At least we may as well add some valuable content as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Why did you say maybe that it would be better to sit on a mountain? Would it be easier? Or?
You know, honestly, I've been so busy during the lockdown also, so many online sessions, and I'm sure you know the experience sometimes, like literally in a day, 10, 12 hours behind the screen. I mean, it's tiring. It's not great. And I would love to spend time in nature in the same way. Of course, I'm busy with so many things. But then when you know that, oh, you can just be also and just sit there, and that's also wonderful. Mm-hmm. But I think that is where the beauty is, that when you feel good, when you feel peaceful, naturally you start thinking, okay, what can I do for other people? So many people may be stressed. So they're more focused on themselves because that's natural. You want to get rid of that. You want to feel good. Yeah. But then the moment you feel good and you feel, oh, I don't need anything else, or I'm very happy, content, then that's not a stagnant state. Then very naturally you say, okay, what can I do for others? Yeah. So sometimes, of course, you say, oh yeah, it would be so nice to take a break. And once in a while, if I have a chance, I do that few days, go into silence and just be with myself. But apart from that, then you say, okay, but you have all this energy.
You want to share.
And you want to share it, yeah.
Yeah, that's beautiful. What would you say is the best advice you got maybe from your parents or from your master that you want to share with us? What's the best piece that you can give, the best piece of advice?
Oh, that's difficult. If I have to think of one thing. But
you can have more.
One thing that I've seen in my master also is that when you're able to accept people as they are, including yourself, then that allows you to be so natural, so free wherever you go. And even if you want to change things, you know, whether it is in society, whether it is in your relationships, it starts from acceptance if you want to be really effective. And I've seen that with him, like people from all over the world come to him, and it doesn't matter what background, culture, you know, they may be a president, a farmer, or a terrorist, but people feel so at ease with him. They feel so comfortable because he accepts them totally as they are. And then you see that they're also much more open to listen. Like just in a relationship, if your partner tells you that, oh, you know, what you're doing is wrong or this is not good, but if they come from a space of acceptance, then even if at that moment maybe you're angry or upset or you're not in the mood to listen, then later you think, oh yeah, but actually, you know, what they said is right. But if someone comes from a space of anger or frustration or whatever it may be, and then if they say, oh, this is wrong or this is like that, even if they're 100% right, and even if you know that it's true, because the feeling is there behind it, you won't be in a space to let it in, you know, to accept it. And I've seen that even with ourselves, if you're able to fully accept yourself the way you are, then again, that's not a stagnant state. It allows you to grow. Rather, it allows you to grow more. But you go from a space of, you can say, one level of perfection to another level of perfection, rather than being continuously in a state of that something is imperfect. And that total acceptance is something that really, yeah, allows life to blossom.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Thank you for your, yeah, sharing with us.
Most welcome.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Mindful and Millionaire podcast. I hope you enjoyed and got inspired. You'll find all the interesting links and information in the show notes. Let's keep in touch on Instagram, Steffi Rose Duman, and I'll be super grateful when you will rate, review, or share this podcast.